Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you.
Today's special guest is Darren Prius, executive director of the Central Missouri Community Action. He's here to talk to us a little bit about some work that CMCA is doing. So why don't you give our listeners kind of an idea of what CMCA is and what its purpose is?
Sure. Central Missouri Community Action is a community action agency. So we're one of 19 agencies in the state, and we cover every county across the state through our network. And there's over 1,000 community action agencies across the country. Formed back in the 60s as part of the War on Poverty, we're an anti-poverty organization. So all of our work is designed to move people towards economic stability. So whether that's through workforce supports like Head Start, where we can provide a high quality early education experience for young children, and we also work with their families at the same time to move them towards economic stability. We do things like employment and training, and we provide rental assistance, housing supports, utility assistance, weatherization to make homes more energy efficient. We have a financial opportunity center to help people really think through whatever money they do have to do budgeting and planning for their future, to establish savings accounts, those types of activities. We've even dabbled with micro lending, and we started a women's business center back in 2016 to help women start their own small businesses. So really looking at what's going on in the communities that we serve. And that's, we cover an 8-county service area and looking for opportunities to help people move up.
All right. So CMCA has also become a leading player in the discussion about affordable housing here in Jefferson City. So how would you, or how would CMCA, assess the housing situation in the capital city?
Well, if I could, too, I'll add to what I was saying about CMCA and what we do with housing. So I mentioned that we provide housing assistance, rental assistance. We also develop properties. So we are general partners in 6 different apartment complexes throughout the area. We build single-family homes primarily in Columbia and Fulton, but we've bought some lots in Jefferson City, so we're planning to expand some single-family housing. So we have a fair amount of experience working on the development side of things. As we do our community assessments around our area, we keep coming up with housing as being an issue of significant need. Jefferson City, Cole County, is top of the list. It was bad enough already just because the way the housing market works, we weren't seeing a lot of production in Jefferson City. And then, as we all know, the tornado ripped through in 2019 and destroyed 152 some odd units of housing. So none of those have been replaced at this point, and a lot of people have been displaced. So the city of Jefferson paid for a housing study last year. And that study just reveals what I think people sort of generally feel already. And that's just, there's just not enough housing at any level, whether you're talking about homeless shelters or you're talking about high end $400,000 and $500,000 homes and everything in between. There is not enough housing for people to live in.
Right.
And you hear that in some of our largest employers who are saying, we've got people, we've got openings for jobs. We want to bring people in, but there's nowhere for them to live.
Right.
So they're living outside of Jefferson City somewhere, or they're not coming to employment opportunities here in Jefferson City.
Yeah. Or some of them have even shipped the work elsewhere.
Right, absolutely.
So, which I think goes to my next question. So how is affordable housing really tied to the economic health of a community?
Well, it's tremendous. I mean, in the housing study, I've got some statistics that I shared at a housing task force the other night. Some of those highlights are growth in lower wage sectors present need for affordably priced housing. The 4 of the top 5 occupations in Jefferson City pay under $35,000 a year. The lowest paying jobs in Jefferson City can't afford home purchases at Jefferson City median prices. And then this is the big one. Jefferson City's labor market is largely driven by commuters coming into the city. You know, we've heard Mayor Fitzwater talking about wanting to grow the population.
Right.
I think that's a really important strategy for economic development, but you can't do it without housing.
No, you can't. And to me, that also spreads out the property tax base and everything else,
yep.
You know, the tax base itself that,
absolutely,
that would help support law enforcement, firefighting, etc.
So
last year, CMCA was one of 4 developers that came to the table with some planned developments. They were seeking low-income tax credits from the state. All 4 of the proposals failed to secure approval, largely due to opposition from members of the public. So CMCA is back this year with another proposal for a housing complex. So kind of share with us what your plan is that you'd like to see happen now.
Sure. I cringe when you say we failed, because our application was actually the third highest rating in the entire region for outstate Missouri. So it was a very good proposal, and it checked all the boxes for the Missouri Housing Development Commission. But as you said, there was opposition in Jefferson City, and these are the only four proposals in the state that had opposition. Everybody else recognizes that there's a need for housing. So we saw projects get awarded in Columbia, in Fulton, and, you know, all around the state, but not Jefferson City, where we had some really good proposals. So to get back to your question, last year we submitted a proposal for 40 units. We did some soul searching after the project got shot down last year, but we decided that it's important enough, we need to keep at this until we get it. So we also recognize that because these tax credit dollars are so incredibly competitive, you know, we're really only likely to see one project succeed in Jefferson City per year. I hope that this is the first of a string of them, because that's what we need. So I don't know if the other developers are planning to submit proposals, but we decided that we would. And because we think there'll just be one project awarded, we increased the number of units in our proposal. So we added basically another building, another 16 units to our project. So this year we'll be proposing a 56 unit project out on the west side. It's off of Old Loman Road. They'll have rent from $480 will be the lowest two-bedroom price to about $800 for the largest of the three-bedroom, two-bathroom units. The project will have a community room, and it's going to have extra strength on it, so it'll actually serve as a storm shelter as well. So we've figured up the units, the size, so that we could hold all the tenants in there in the case of another storm. And that community room will have computer workstations. We'll have an office to provide supportive services. And the service-enriched component is a really important aspect of this development because, you know, we want to make sure that the tenants don't just have a roof over their head, but that they're successful in whatever their goals are, whether it's just to be a good employee or to get a new job or to move up in their wages. Whatever it is, we want to help to make sure that they're successful. So we'll be providing that coaching on site. We'll be providing tutoring for any school-age children that live in the complex. There'll be a playground on site. There'll be a dog park on site even. That's, I'm kind of a dog guy, so I was really excited to add that to it. But we really think it's the kind of project that this community can be proud of. You know, these projects are heavily, heavily regulated and monitored. So the quality of construction, the quality of maintenance, all of those will be very high. And then, you know, we do background checks on the tenants. The whole idea is to make this not just affordable, but high quality in a place where people can thrive.
Yeah. So how big is this location?
It's about 2.5 acres is the size of the lot.
Okay, so a good size tract. So some who are not necessarily keen on the idea would say if a development is going to be successful, it ought to stand on its own legs and not need state tax grants or any sort of funding. So is that an accurate view of the situation?
It's not. I appreciate that perspective because I think we should be cautious about government spending. I think we should all be really tuned into where our taxpayer dollars are going. But the fact is, affordable housing is not affordable to build just using market rates. We're building a couple of houses in Columbia right now that we're going to spend $200 per square foot for those houses. And you can't turn around and sell that to somebody making 60 or 80% of their income because they need to see a mortgage payment or a rent payment of less than $1,000. And when you do the math, you can't build something that would allow for that level of rent or mortgage. It's going to be higher. You could build a 56-unit apartment, I guess, with bank financing. I'm not sure if a bank would actually fund it. That would be a good question for a banker. But you could build that, but then you'd have to charge rents of $1,200 to $1,500 for each of those units. And that's just not going to help out your average teacher or police officer who's looking for a place they can afford.
Sure. What are some of the misconceptions you think that folks have about this development that might have been behind the protests, letters, or just concerns that folks might have that you could allay any fears they have?
Well, I remember when Councilman Deacon said, we don't want people that are making $12 an hour living in Jefferson City. And I was really shocked by that. Yeah. So that reflects a misconception that's out there that A, people that are making minimum wage aren't worthy of living in housing and having housing. And B, that they're not a part of the economy. You know, those are people working in retail locations. They're working in our hospitals and our schools. Teachers are, you know, in some cases, they're making more than that, but they're still kind of low middle class workforce housing. So I think there's this misconception that we might be, you know, bringing poor people to town. And it's just not the case. This is housing for people that live and work and play here in Jefferson City.
Yeah. And I think you touched on it earlier when you were talking about the study. It doesn't mean this will be the piece that solves the entire housing problem.
No, right.
This is one piece of a bigger picture.
Right. So. There's a lot of groups working on the different components of it. You know, I said in the meeting the other night at the task force meeting that this is where our wheelhouse is. We have the ability to leverage these federal tax credits to bring in resources and do good work here in Jefferson City.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and if I'm remembering correctly, the story that Cameron did, which we'll put in our show notes, but I want to say you actually lived in this type of housing at one point in your career.
I did. Yeah. Okay. Right out of college. I lived in it was called Primrose Place down in Springfield, Missouri. Yeah. And I was working at a pizza place at the time. I was a shift manager with my English degree. And I didn't know that it was low income or tax credit housing. It was just an apartment that I could afford.
Right.
And it was a nice place and it was, you know, well kept and my neighbors were friendly. It was a great opportunity for me as I was getting started in my career and, you know, a place to live.
Yeah. Well, and I think you touched on a little bit there, low income housing, Section 8 housing, it has kind of leaves a sour taste in folks' minds. So why don't we talk a little bit about what that means, you know, how that would apply to this development if it comes to pass.
Mm-hmm. So we will hold 10% of the units for vulnerable populations. Mm-hmm. So those who are really at risk of homelessness. So we would accept housing choice vouchers. That's the Section 8 program. Housing choice voucher sounds better than the connotation that comes with Section 8 housing.
Right.
So we would accept those. I think it's important to note that there are misconceptions that are applied to the housing choice voucher program too. Everybody knows a landlord that's had a bad experience, and that's really regardless of whether they're subsidized or not.
Right.
Owning a home that somebody else lives in can create tension. So, you know, really underlying all of that, again, this is all heavily regulated. So we will be building relationship with our tenants to make sure that they're not getting themselves into trouble or getting themselves in a situation where they can't pay their rent or they're going to be in trouble with the law or that there's going to be violence in their household. We are working with them hand in hand to make sure that they're successful tenants and that they're, you know, good for the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, and I found it interesting in the story you'd also made reference that much of the Section 8 housing or that segment retirees, it's not...
Yeah.
You know, because one of the concerns I had heard last year was crime, concerns of crime, you know, that low income housing means it's going to be an element in there of folks that will make my neighborhood less safe.
Mm-hmm. We operate the Housing Choice Voucher Program in six counties, and 60% of our vouchers go to seniors or people with disabilities. Mm. So it's really a misconception about who is living in those properties and how that program even works.
Yeah, we touched on a little bit, but one of the concerns last year, again, it seemed overarching among many of the proposals was this concept of not in my backyard. I agree, maybe we need housing in the capital city, but I don't need it in my backyard.
Yeah.
So what would you say to those folks that are maybe going to be around Stronghold?
Well, first off, you know, anybody that has attended our Wizards basketball event the last 2 years, have seen our YIMBY posters. We are really trying to get people to say yes in my backyard. So it's important for us that we are producing really high quality properties. That's important to us. We want it to look nice. We want the tenants to be responsible, to hold up their standards. You know, we've notified the school district of the three schools that will be in their attendance areas. And there's LIHTC products all around this community. There's already lots of apartments and most people don't even realize that.
So let's stop for a second there. Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. So what are some that maybe they don't realize.
So two of the projects are Charm Ridge and Weathered Rock. So these are the exact same type of arrangements that we're proposing with our tax credit deal. They're really nice products. They're, you know, I just don't think there's been any issues. I don't know of any complaints of people living near those properties. And I seriously doubt people realize that those are low-income housing tax credit funded properties.
Yeah.
You know, all of these properties have a mixture of incomes, which I think is an important element to them because we need to understand that people that make less or more money than us are not different than us fundamentally. So having mixed income projects is really important. So we'll have, well, for example, at Stronghold Landing, we'll have several units that are at 30% of the area median income. Again, that's for the vulnerable population. Mm-hmm. But then we'll have several at 60%, 80%, and then also market rate. So folks where income isn't even a component of their application for living in Stronghold Landing. So it'll be a mix of people living there. And we think that that's a healthy part of affordable housing.
Sure. Sure. And I will tell you, as a person who drives by one of those properties every night, no, I did not know that. And so I think that's very enlightening. So
we talked about how there's a whole range of need. Mm-hmm. There's a whole continuum of housing that we need to accomplish.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of folks are really interested in having single family homes, that mm-hmm. they feel like that's a part of the fabric of the community. Even though the majority of housing is rental in Jefferson City, we do think that there's an important place for single family homes that people can afford to buy.
Yeah.
So we've acquired 2 single family home lots so far, and we're looking to acquire another 3 or so. Some of the CDBG disaster relief dollars are available for single family home development. So we'd like to take advantage of that. We could use some down payment assistance from the city. And then, you know, the more we can subsidize the cost of construction, we can control the sale price. So, you know, looking for a target price of between $130,000 and $150,000 for a single family home, that's much more reasonable. I'm sure your listeners are thinking, okay, that's something that we could afford to buy. You can do the math in your head of what a mortgage might be. It's going to be, you know, $900 or maybe $1,000 for that mortgage. You know, that would work with the typical workforce in Jefferson City.
Okay.
I just wanted to add, Gary, that, you know, there are a lot of organizations working on this housing issue. So we think our proposal and some of the work we're doing is really important. But River City Habitat is also building homes, and their work is very important. Common Ground is supporting home ownership and affordable housing. You know, there's organizations out there that it's really important that we all look for ways to support whatever organization it is that kind of perks your interest or that you have some connection to. We all want to solve this problem together and work with developers and bankers and the business community to bring the resources so that we're not just addressing one component of the housing need, but we're really hitting the entire continuum.
I think that's a great point, because also I will say the whole Capital City Task Force, the approach it's taken of education, helping me as a member of the community understand what percent of my rent or mortgage is healthy.
You know, right.
Discussing topics like that so we all have a better understanding will help us maybe make better choices going forward.
I think a lot of us in the nonprofit community and those of us interested in housing in particular were shocked last year at the opposition. And we said, oh my gosh, we need to do a lot more education, help people understand what the dynamic really looks like out here.
Yeah. So, Darren, you're facing some tight deadlines, I got to tell you. As a newsroom guy, I'll tell you, I face deadlines every day, but I think yours are probably more pressing. So you have a deadline for the state grants as well as some tornado disaster money that's coming close to expiring. So what do the next couple of weeks look like for you?
So by the time this airs, the city council will already have considered a resolution, hopefully in favor of support for this particular project. And we'll use that resolution to submit our application to Jefferson City for the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Relief Fund, so CDBGDR. And so that will be about $4 million that we're requesting to leverage the federal tax credit dollars. So that'll come up in the middle of August, and then the application deadline for the federal and state tax credits will be at the end of September. So these applications are hundreds of pages, and we'll have to do a new market study. Basically, we'll just need to update last year's market study. We'll have to do a utility study. We'll have to go around and get support from local businesses, which, you know, the local Chamber of Commerce and JC Rep has been fantastic in really bringing the business community to the table and support. So we've got a lot of work to do, and it's coming around quick. The application deadline, again, is the end of September. And then in October and November, the Missouri Housing Development Commission will have public hearings where people can hopefully voice their support for our project. And then they'll have a meeting in December to make decisions.
Okay. So as we wrap this conversation up, why don't you make your case as to why the community does need to get on board with this proposal and why this issue is so important to the city?
Well, again, it just goes back to basic math. You know, we lost 152 some odd units in the tornado, and this will help replace 56 of them. So that's a start. We want to be a part of that start. We're calling it Stronghold Landing because we wanted to reflect the rally cry of J.C. Strong, that we all came together for tornado relief. And there was this great sense in Jefferson City that we're all in this together. We're all trying to help the people that were affected by the tornado and to make our community better. That's what Stronghold Landing is. It's a reflection of that sentiment to really help people to live and thrive in this community. We know that we're going to have a good application because as a nonprofit applicant rather than a for-profit developer, we get extra points for that. We're serving a vulnerable population as well as workforce housing. We really check off all the boxes for the Missouri Housing Development Commission, and we think this is a very viable project, again, that the community can and should be proud of.
All right. Well, stay tuned. We'll see how things work. We wish you the best of luck in your application.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.